Okay, good evening. So tonight's topic is a continuation of our series on Mechiras Chametz. In a sense, it's a little bit of a postscript, because last week we completed a major portion of it that we discussed the history of the Harama concern regarding Chametz and the various approaches to make sure that it's not a harama, and we closed with kind of a point of hashkafa that perhaps we can understand the embrace, to the extent that there is one, of Mechiras Chametz coming from the fact that it's not necessarily really an evasion of the spirit of the law, and that the idea that we're not supposed to eat Chametz on Pesach, which is an Issa D'Araisa, but according to the Ran and maybe many other Rishonim, the purpose is to keep us away from eating Chametz. And therefore, maybe we can address that in a satisfactory way by selling the Chametz. That even though we don't end up ever really seeing the Chametz disappear, the Chametz doesn't get picked up usually over the course of Pesach, it remains in our house, and it invariably returns to us after Pesach. But nonetheless, maybe none of that matters, because perhaps all we need to do is to assign title legally to someone else, and that will be effective, because since it's prohibited at that point to take the chametz, that's somebody else's property, that prohibition of gezel will also keep us away from eating chametz. And we talked about how that is a perhaps even a valuable statement to make and why that might be. So within that context, we're now going to look at a question that really is very far from that, because what we established in light of the idea that Mechiras Chametz could be seen as valid because it keeps us away from eating Chametz, so as we noted, that requires a certain attitude. It requires that we are careful not to steal. We have to care about that. And it requires also that we relate to Mechiras Chametz as an absolute sale for all intents and purposes. And we don't tell ourselves that we're allowed to use it, it's okay, you won't care. And that there are other aspects of seriousness that are present in the sale that highlight and that establish for us that the sale really is a genuine sale, and it is indeed, for all intents and purposes, the property of someone else. So all of that is going to be far away from what we're talking about tonight, because tonight I'd like to talk about the question of a situation that won't fit that standard at all, and as far as the spirit of the law, is going to be pretty far away from the spirit. But nonetheless, maybe there is some halachic validity, and maybe there is some purpose to what we're going to discuss, while other poskim greatly disagreed. And that is the question of stores that sell chametz, perhaps supermarkets, for example, and that have Jewish owners to a significant degree, and whether or not that would be an effective sale, that if the owner would sell his store, sell the chametz in his store, and yet continue to do business with the chametz over the course of Pesach, is it possible to say that such a sale is still valid? And granted that it's not going to satisfy what we talked about last week, that certainly will not reflect the spirit of the law, where we noted you have to really not be involved with your chametz and really consider it sold to someone else and not accessible to you. So here, clearly, that is not being adhered to. And there are many other halachic problems with what's happening. This individual is doing business with chametz over Pesach, is doing business with somebody else's chametz, if we consider it to be sold. He's selling chametz probably to Jews who will be eating it on Pesach. There is a whole lot that is wrong with what is happening here. But that being said, is it still possible on any level to say that that mechira could be a valid mechira and perhaps remove the problem of chametz over lava Pesach, at least for afterwards? And what impact would that have on those who would want to purchase this chametz afterwards? So this was a significant machlokas. That's why we called it the great chametz, great supermarket debate. And perhaps not surprisingly, there were those who felt that this is completely nothing, that a sale that happens where the owners continue afterwards to do business with the chametz, and especially to do business over the course of Pesach. So all of that shows that the sale was never serious, and it is null and void. And that was the opinion of a number of great poskim, including Rav Soloveitchik, who felt that way, and including also Rabbi Yashiv, going back, the Steich Hemed, the Maram Shik, Rav Belsky, and many others took this position that this sale is completely null and void. And that we can understand because it seems like there's a clear lack of seriousness here. And how could we call it a sale if the owner is going to continue doing business with it afterwards? So on the one hand, that position is perhaps the more understandable one from a certain perspective. This was also, as I noted, the position of Rebelsky of the OU, who explained that any sale where there's absolutely no difference in what's happening afterwards and everything is just continuing as it was, so then that couldn't be called a sale in any sense of the word. It's interesting to note that this discussion actually started in some earlier sources where the Steich Hemed and others, it started in a somewhat more innocent context because the question was also asked about Erev Pesach Shechalios B'Shabbos. So when that's the case, when Erev Pesach is Shabbos, so then we can't sell the chametz on Shabbos, so we sell it the day before. And really, theoretically, because there's no Isser Hanah of chametz on that day, 2 days before Pesach, so really we could keep going with the chametz and only sell it right before Shkia, right before Shabbos starts. But in order to keep things consistent, so we don't do that, and we have the sale take place at roughly the same time, or basically the same time it would have had it been actually Erev Pesach. So even though it's 2 days before Pesach, but we have the sale at the time that would be right before the Isser Hanah had it actually been Erev Pesach. But then that creates a situation where maybe it's not so fair on the stores and the merchants who rely on the income that they would get because they could keep on selling the chametz up until Shabbos. There's no Isser Hanah. So how exactly does that work? So if this chametz was already sold earlier in the day, can a merchant continue to do business with it? So here, this is a more innocent situation than the supermarkets because it's not based on somebody who's ignoring Pesach or who's not worried about the Isser chametz. He's going to stay away from chametz during the prohibited times. But the rest of that day, there's no Isser chametz. So it's only a question of, does the fact that this individual is continuing to do business with the chametz, does that cast a aspersion? Does that essentially nullify the sale that he had gone through earlier in the day? So that was one context of discussion, and it's more relevant all the time to the situation of these supermarkets or these stores that are continuing to do business. So there were those who understood that that shows that even more so that here there's a disregard for the Isser of Chametz, and there is a constant ongoing situation where they will always be doing this business over the course of Pesach, and therefore we should say that the sale is nothing. And some thought maybe it's better that the sale is nothing, because if the sale was something, so then it would be a violation of Gezel, because if they're selling chametz that they already sold to someone else, so then that means they're stealing from those people. And as we noted, we have to take the situation of Gezel seriously. We have to take that issue seriously. Otherwise, the whole premise of Mechiras Chametz is not going to make sense for us. So again, here, naniach, that they're not actually fitting at all the ideal model of Mechiras Chametz that we spoke about. But there's also potentially a violation of Gezel if we should say that the sale actually was good. So there are also those who compare this to a Gemara Maseches Nedarim, where you have the situation of the Matnas Bas Chorin. There's a Mishnah and the Gemara in Maseches Nedarim, which tells the story of a man who wanted to invite his father to his son's wedding, and his father had taken a neder of hana from him. So therefore, in order to try to find a way that his father can come to the wedding, despite the isser hana that he took upon himself, so he made a gift of the wedding hall and of the meal to somebody else, and he said, okay, it's yours now, please invite my father to the wedding. And then the guy said, okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm actually going to be makdish this. I'm going to dedicate it to the Beis HaMikdash. So the original owner said, no, wait a minute, that's not why I gave it to you. I didn't give it to you so that you could be makdish it. And the recipient said, yeah, I understand. I know exactly why you gave it to me. You gave it to me so that you can get around the nether situation, and you can do that on my back. So I'm not playing along, and I'm going to dedicate it to the Beis HaMikdash. And then the Gemara says that any matana that the recipient cannot donate to the Beis HaMikdash is not called a matana, is not called a transaction. So that reflects a sale that was essentially no good because it was completely artificial. So there are those who suggest that this falls into that category of matnas baschorin. And there the Gemara says that it's especially true because here the purpose is that you was in order to enable the father to come to the wedding. And his actions made it very clear that that's what was going on, that that was the whole purpose. So since his actions show us what the story really is, so then these poskim argued that's also the case when it comes to the situation of the supermarkets that continue to do business, and perhaps it's even worse because it is much more overt and it's much clearer that they're continuing to do business, and perhaps that undermines the whole thing. Some also point out that the Chassam Sofer, who was one of the big defenders of Mechiras Chametz against the Bechor Shor, so he had a tshuva. I don't remember if we talked about this last week or not, but in one of his tshuvas he said that even if one were to argue that the purchaser, that the non-Jew, is not necessarily taking it seriously because he's somehow getting the message that the Jew doesn't mean it so seriously, but, said the Chassam Sofer, maybe it doesn't matter so much because the nature of Mechiras Chametz is addressing a concern, not that the Chametz has to be owned by a non-Jew, but that it shouldn't be owned by a Jew. So as long as it leaves the possession of the Jew, we don't really care if the non-Jew actually takes possession of it. So we could deal with a kind of one-sided sale. A lot of other poskim didn't understand that svara and weren't sure why that should be. And some point out that maybe it's clear that the Chassam Sofer was not relying on that svara, was just mentioning it as an extra aspect. But in any event, here it seems to be that we're going in the opposite direction, because here, if the Jew is continuing to be involved in the Chametz, so the Chassam Sofer said that was the big focus, that we're concerned about what the Jew is doing more than what the non-Jew is doing. So the fact that the Jew is continuing to be involved, so you'd lose the Chassam Sofer svara, and that would be a bigger problem. Rav Moshe Sternbach, in his Tshuvas Van Hagos, so he was also very machmir about this, and he noted also that, if you recall, that the Bechor Shor, his position was that the sale of Chametz was okay because there is bittel, which knocks it down to a drabanan in his assessment. So Sternbach notes, so here you're missing that. You don't have bittel because they're continuing to do business with it. It's clearly no actual bittel there, and therefore that svara that would help Mechiras Chametz in general would be missing here. He also noted that there's a Gemara in Beitza, which talking about Harama, and as we noted, the language of the Gemara referencing Harama is not necessarily the same as those who have labeled Mechiras Chametz as such. But nonetheless, the Gemara says in Beitza that when it comes to a Harama, they had a bigger knas for that than they did for an Avera B'mezid. And Rashi there explains because people will look at it and think it's permissible, and really it isn't. So therefore, says Rav Sternbach, since here we're dealing with harama and it's a completely fake sale, and so therefore, all the more so, the idea of Chametz Avrel Af HaPesach is a knas, and that knas applies primarily to somebody who chooses to own Chametz on Pesach. But here the Gemara is saying that the harama is even worse than a mezid. So if you have that knas for a individual who just straight out owns chametz, so then all the more so for a harama such as this. So there were many machmirim. There were some who, like the Stechema discusses, maybe found some way that some of it could be salvaged afterwards because there was somewhat of a reckoning with what is the tzibur able to accept in terms of this psak. But there were many machmirim. So the question is, why are there those who disagree? And that is indeed the case, that there were great poskim who disagreed and did allow such sales to be considered valid, including Reb Moshe Feinstein and Reb Yaakov Breish and his Chelkas Yaakov and others. So there were a number of svaras that they utilized in order to explain why the sale could be good. And there were also a number of iterations of this position. But just to start perhaps from the most absolute, so there is a way to say that despite all the problems that are going on, but to whatever extent there is chametz that remains, that chametz is considered to be sold. And maybe we can even account for the gezel issue as well. So how would that come out? So the idea that the sale would be valid, despite the behavior of the store owner, would be premised on the fact that dvarim shebelev einam dvarim, that when somebody goes through with a certain transaction, and it could be that in his heart of hearts he was thinking of something else, so normally we say dvarim shebelev einam dvarim, that if you made a deal with another person, so the fact that you may have been insincere, so that's not something we can act upon because that's going to impinge on the rights of the recipient. So the recipient who believes he went through a transaction and he paid for something and he believes he owns it, so you can't show up the next week and say, well, guess what, I was just kidding, I'm taking it back. The fact that you may have been insincere is not sufficient to negate the rights of the purchaser. So we would normally say, dvarim shebelev einam dvarim. The fact that you may be insincere is not enough reason to change the terms of the deal here. So if that's the argument, so taka, that's a good point. So now let's flip the question back on the machmirim. So why would anyone disagree with that? So here the objection would be that this is not simply dvarim shebelev. That yes, it's true that if I sell you something and I'm really thinking in my heart of hearts that I'm secretly insincere, so it's not fair that that should impact our deal. But if it's something that's happening so overtly and predictably and it's being advertised and every year this is what's going on, the store remains open over the course of Pesach and everyone knows that and people are going to come shopping there because it's advertised like that. So that's not simply dvarim shebelev. That is dvarim shebelibo ubelev kol adam. And that's essentially an umdana demuchach. That's something that is clear and out there. So from that perspective, those poskim thought that you can't simply call that dvarim shebelev, and we would indeed invalidate such a sale. But again, there were those who did take this position, including Reb Moshe Feinstein, including the Chelkas Yaakov, and other poskim as well, throwing in additional svaras. So earlier than this, the Divrei Chaim, Reb Chaim Sanzer, he wrote in one of his tshuvas, he was discussing there a scenario where there was a Jew who was otherwise not from at all. And the truth is, this question is not only relevant to people who own stores, it's most relevant to that because of the public nature and because of the impinging on the monetary rights of the purchaser. But there were those poskim who felt that any time you have somebody who doesn't care about the prohibition of chametz, somebody who's not observant in that way, so then already we should say that maybe that casts aspersions on the sale, even if it's not as public and as blatant. But among those who disagreed, Reb Chaim Sanzer, who was asked about the situation where there was a Jew who wasn't really observant at all, and nonetheless, he sold his chametz on Pesach, because that's what he knows he has to do in order to deal with the community. So one year he was traveling, and he sent a message to his wife, who was not Jewish, that she should arrange for the sale, so he shouldn't have problems later. And he explicitly refers to the sale as lifnim, as a sale that was basically only superficial. So Reb Chaim Sanzer was asked about this, and he said that the sale is still valid. And yes, it may be the case that this individual doesn't really understand the way the sale is working, and he knows that he gets the chametz back after Pesach, so to him, he thinks it's all superficial, and that's how he phrases it. But if you were to explain to him that the sale has to be valid in order for it to affect anything, so then he would agree, okay, so then fine, let's make it effective, and let's do it sincerely. So that was a view consistent with these types of attitudes that Rav Moshe and others have. And the issue of gezel in the case of the supermarket, so there is theoretically a way to address that also, because the way it works, where we have the purchaser giving a down payment, and after Pesach, he has the opportunity to pay off the whole bill. So let's say in the case of a supermarket, the seller might say, okay, I've got $1 million worth of chametz, and I'm selling that to you. And after Pesach, so you have to pay me the whole million. Right now, you just made a down payment. So then he ends up doing business over Pesach. He can come afterwards to the purchaser and say, I know I told you I had $1 million of chametz, but over Pesach I sold $400,000 worth of it. So now, if you want to keep what's left, it's only going to cost you $600,000. So if he's upfront about that before taking the full payment, so then perhaps that would account for the gezel aspect as well. So there were a few other svaras that were brought into the view of the Mekilim. Among them, it's very interesting that there is an often cited position of the Rambam in explaining the notion of kfiya by a get, that we have a premise that when a get is given, it has to be baratzon. Nonetheless, the Gemara says there are situations where a get can be compelled. So how do you reconcile the idea of a get needing ratzon and yet theoretically able to be compelled? So the Rambam, in a very often quoted position in Hilchos Gerushin and Perek Beis Halacha Chav, the Rambam wrote that we assume that deep down the Pintali Yid always wants to do the right thing. So even if he's acting the wrong way, that's the Yetzer Hara getting in the way, but deep down he wants to do the right thing. So in that context, the kfiya does ultimately reveal a ratzon, because the ratzon to do what the Torah asks is still going to be what is actually in the best interest and consistent with what this person can be assumed to want. So therefore it's effective. So poskim have taken this svara of the Rambam and applied it in some fascinating ways. And among them was the Chalkas Yaakov talking here. He says that even if this guy is doing everything else wrong, but there's some way to save some of his behavior and to say that this won't necessarily have to be usher, even though everything else is. So because of that pintali yid, so we assume that that's true here. It's a very interesting application because there are many reasons to question it, among the fact that there are two people in this transaction who both have to take it seriously, and one of them doesn't have a pintali yid. One of them is not a yid at all. And yet, nonetheless, apparently the pintali yid in the seller is perhaps enough to establish validity here, and you can say that it's going to be effective. There are a few other svaras that are added here as well. Rav Zilberstein talks about in a Sefer Chashukei Chemed to Psachim that he notes that there is a comment to the Rashba in the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Yud Ches Amid Beis that talks about Beis Din possibly declaring property to be ownerless if that's going to save the people from sinning. So maybe you could assume that there's a presumption in effect regarding chametz, that even at least one maybe who participates in the sale without understanding what's really going on and what's really being expected of him. So maybe we can assume that there's an understanding that Chazal were basically mafkir his property, and in order to save them from the Avera, so maybe that's going to be considered to be an effect, which is a very mechudish way of looking at it. This was first brought up by Bshula of Kutno in his Shuvas Yeshuvas Malko, and he, in that context, he actually rejected it. There, what was going on was a particularly egregious situation, very particularly questionable sale of chametz, that there was a situation where a non-observant individual had very superficially sold the liquor in his possession to a non-Jew, Why? Because he wanted to avoid the civil authorities and their regulation. So he wasn't even aware of Pesach at all. He was doing this to get out of some civil law. And the question was, could you say that that would also work for the purposes of Chametz? So since he sold it during this time and wasn't in ownership over Pesach, should we say it works for that effect? So he wrote that here the harama, the fakery here is too much, too great of an artifice, that here he doesn't even know that it's Pesach and he's selling it for a different purpose. So that he thought was completely no good. Just to flesh that out a little bit, there is a hanacha that some poskim have that when you are going through with a sale that's meant to accomplish some halachic goal, that even if we would have thought that it's not sincere, but because the halacha is going to require that it is going to be sincere, so then that would make it actually validated, and that we assume that the individual, if he were to understand that it has to be sincere in order to accomplish his goal, so then he's going to be sincere. But here, the person is not even trying to sell it for halachic reasons. He was trying to sell it for legal reasons. And the civil authorities, they don't know whether he's sincere or not. That's not going to affect things. So there, he's just trying to do it only superficially, even by that standard. So that would be certainly a weaker situation, and that would be harder to see as a sale. It's comparable that there is also a story the Yerushalmi talks about where it's possible to get married just for halachic purposes, and that's considered valid. So the Gemara says that Tarfon wanted to help women who were starving, so he was a Kohen, so he married hundreds of women so that they could eat truma. And apparently, even though the Gemara calls that a harama, and he wasn't actually living with these women, but nonetheless, it was effective for the purposes of Truma, and the poskim explain that since he's trying to accomplish a halachic status, so then he had to have full intent, otherwise it wouldn't do what he's looking to do. So therefore we can assume that that was sincere. So some poskim compared that to a green card marriage. Let's say if somebody gets married just to give the spouse citizenship, so then maybe that should be considered a halachically valid marriage that would require a get, just like Rabbi Tarfon, or Tzipei Safranek and others. They argued on that position because they said there's a difference, that if you're doing it because of civil regulations, so then there's no reason to assume that you're actually sincere. But if you're doing it for halachic status, you want to accomplish a halachic goal, so then being that it needs to be sincere in order to take effect, so then maybe we could assume that that would indeed be the case. There are a few other svaras that are also brought in. There's a Gemara in Chulin on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, where there the Gemara says that even if you have a mumar ochel nevelus l'teavon, so you have somebody who generally is willing to eat non-kosher food, but if there's any detail that he could do properly, so then we assume that he would do it properly. If it's not going to get in the way of his taiva to eat the non-kosher food, but there's Gemara talks about whether his shechita knife is kosher or not, if there's a way for him to get what he wants without having to violate any more averas, so then we'll assume that that avera is not violated. So perhaps here also it's a similar to the Pintaliyat idea, but it's coming from a little bit of a different perspective, a little bit different source, but maybe that's the same kind of idea, that even if everything else is happening wrong, so then we can still assume that whatever could be right is right. The Chalkas Yaakov, we mentioned, was very passionate that this is something that could be validated and should be done in order to save the masses from as much sin as we can save them from, and in order to prevent the problem for the purchasers of Chametz Shavua v'Pesach. And he was very adamant about this. There are ha'aras on the bottom of the Chalkas Yaakov from his sons, and there's a whole debate about this, and they argue back and forth about his svaras. But this is how he maintained. And it's also indicated there in the Tshuva Chalkas Yaakov that this was a tshuva that was written to Rabbi Shlomo Schneider. So those of us who remember Rabbi Yosef Wernevsky, Zichrono Livracha, might remember that he often made reference to his conversations with Rabbi Shlomo Schneider, who was a big Talmud Chacham who lived in Monticello, New York, all year round. He lived in Monticello. And after he passed away, they published big volumes of his writings, four big volumes of his writings called Divrei Shlomo. So if you read there, you can see the whole discussion between him and the Chalkas Yaakov. The Chalkas Yaakov's Tshuva is printed there, and Rav Schneider's exchange is printed there. And Rav Schneider argued on a lot of the logic. But then ultimately he concludes that every situation is probably different and it depends on what the Murad Asra establishes, and it's going to be a question about the circumstances. And he, Rabbi Schneider, discusses there that because of the Gezel possibility, it's not even clear that you're helping. So it's one thing to say if you're definitely helping, so then maybe there's a svara that even when it's not consistent with anything else the person is doing, so maybe it's worthwhile. But if there is an issue of Gezel, so then maybe we're leaving him worse off than he would have been otherwise, because now we're turning him into a Gezelin, and without this he wouldn't have been a Gezelin. So again, that goes to the question of, is there a way to maybe address that also? So some poskim thought you would still have Gezel, but you could save the Pesach issues, and some poskim thought, like we said before, that maybe there's even a way that it shouldn't be Gezel. Lubavitch Rebbe was also of the opinion that there could be validity to these sales, and as much as we should try to emphasize that they shouldn't be doing business on Pesach, nonetheless, to the extent that we can't stop them, so then this is a Hatzalah of some level. And one of the accomplishments he notes is that at least you will raise the consciousness of the concept of Pesach and the Yisurim involved. So you're gaining something on that front, because at least you're going to contribute the awareness of Pesach. It's better off than they were before. Rav Moshe and his tshuva, so he does note the variability in terms of what's best for every community. So even though he's basically totally supportive of the sale, but he knows that if you have a Murad Asra who's going to decide that it's not best for his community, so then it's something which he may not necessarily want to go through with. But otherwise, Rav Moshe thought it was okay. And in terms of the question of purchasing chametz from that store afterwards, so here you could imagine a range of attitudes also, because you could say, all right, so the observant purchaser who wants to now buy chametz after Pesach, so maybe he should buy somewhere else, because it's one thing, we're trying to just save whatever we can, so we're saying it's better than nothing for the store owner, but it's not necessarily better than nothing for the purchaser, who could be buying in a place where things aren't at all complicated and aren't at all subject to machlokas. So that's a personal consideration. Rav Moshe, for his part, Rav Moshe thought that basically this was totally effective, and there's no reason for a observant customer to hold back from purchasing this afterwards. And Rav Avadya Yosef agreed with that also. And also Rav Shlomo Zalman agreed with this. So there were those who felt that way. We noted before that Rav Sternbach felt the opposite. He felt that this was an example of what the Gemara says should be subject to a knas because of its harama nature. And the Vilna Gaon, in general, took a strict attitude towards Mechiras Chametz, and he never purchased Chametz that was sold, so he would be presumably Machmir here as well. But this is certainly something that the other poskim had a variety of opinions. We should also note that there are various other permutations here that we should be aware of. That there is a way where an owner can sell chametz in his store, and it may actually have no problems at all. It may be 100% glatt, and maybe even better than what us normal Baal Batim do. Because theoretically, if you have a genuinely observant store owner who can't just get rid of his whole business, but doesn't want to violate the Isser on Pesach, so if he has a non-Jewish partner, if he could find a non-Jewish partner, so then he could sell his whole interest to the partner in such a way that it's actually really his over the course of Pesach, and that the partner is getting all of the profits that come from Pesach, and the Jewish owner is not taking any of those profits at all. So theoretically, if he would set it up that way, so then he wouldn't be in violation of any Yisurim of Pesach, and there wouldn't be any Gezel, and there wouldn't be maybe any problem at all. And in fact, maybe it's even better than what we do as individuals, because the concern we spoke about in past weeks, that maybe this is only justifiable when there's a real parnasa need. So in this case, this is really this person's livelihood, and he's doing this to be able to keep his business open the other weeks of the year, and just he can't close down for that 1 week, but he's not looking to make any profit from that. So theoretically, that could be a modification in a very positive direction, which maybe would have no halachic problems at all. On the other hand, we could go in the other direction and make things even worse, maybe, or make things even more stretched. But if we say that it's possible to validate the sale of a non-observant store owner who's continuing to do business over the course of Pesach, so that's justifiable partially because of the pintaliyid and saving whatever you want to save and things like that. So could we go even further and sell for somebody who is not even aware of it and say that there is a zchus here? So that's a complex question, because normally we say zachan lo adam shelo b'fanav, that we can acquire something on behalf of someone else, because we can assume, if the facts are consistent with this, that it's a zchus for him. So you can provide a benefit for somebody even if they're not there to approve of it. But we don't say zachin me'adam, that you can't sell someone's property without their knowledge, because maybe they're not interested in selling it. So how do we know that that's a zchus? So what about when we're dealing with chametz? So first, to note a more straightforward situation, but a tragic situation, let's say, Rahman Latzlan, somebody's in a coma when Pesach starts. And he's somebody who is observant, and every year, for all the previous years, he sells his chametz before Pesach, and now he's simply unable to because he's not conscious. So can people around him say, okay, but it's a zchus for him to have his chametz sold, so we can sell it on his behalf? So there's a good case to be made, because the alternative is that his chametz is going to become worthless, and being that he's observant, so he won't use it, he will actually treat it as worthless. So therefore, to be able to save that from happening is presumably a zchus gamur. And say in that case, you also have the additional svara that he has shown that he does sell his chametz all the time. So it's safe to assume, with all those facts together, that he would have done it this year also had he been conscious. So the argument that there's a genuine zchus there is an easier argument to make. But would you also call it a zchus if it's just a spiritual zchus and the person involved maybe isn't otherwise machshiv that zchus? So in the case of the comatose person, is going to have a monetary impact, and he's going to relate to it as such because he's observant. But somebody who's not going to relate to an iser of chametz shavur lev pesach, so the only zchus that you're going to have is the spiritual zchus that you're saving his neshama in a way that he doesn't yet appreciate, doesn't care about. So could you call that a zchus? So that's a good question. And that's something that Poskim debated. And there are a lot of practical questions also. So if you're going to decide to sell on behalf of somebody without his agreeing, so who's the one who gets to sell? And how exactly do you carry it out? And maybe there'll be multiple Rabbanim who will go through with it. And how exactly is that going to make sense? So it becomes a much more complicated question. But nonetheless, there are those who thought that was possible, and that perhaps reflects just how far one might go with this attempt to be mezakeh rabbim. So this is a particularly fascinating question, a fascinating machlokes, and it reflects a lot of the issues that the Rabbanim struggled with in terms of trying to bring the greatest chus to the tzibor. So what exactly would be the policy that would do that, given that situations are not necessarily perfect and people are coming from different places with different kinds of considerations? So that being the case, what should the attitude be? So here we have, on the one hand, the machmirim saying that the sale simply has no potential, and that the behavior of the owner shows that it was never a serious sale in a way that's a anan sadi, and it's comparable perhaps to matnas beis chorin, and would be subject, as Rav Schoenbuch suggests, to a knas, and doesn't have the chsam sofer svara of at least leaving the Jewish hands. And on the other hand, you had a range of mekilim who thought that we still would say dvarim shebelev, enam dvarim here, and therefore the overt terms of the transaction would still be in effect. And maybe there is an aspect of schus and an aspect of the pintaliyid trying to save whatever could be saved. and maybe also the chazaka that somebody who's a mumra l'teyavon wouldn't necessarily go for any more averis than he has to. So all of this was marshaled by those poskim who thought there was room for kula here and to try to minimize the averis of Klal Yisrael to whatever extent it was possible. But certainly, l'chadchila, so as to reiterate, we spoke about last week, that for those of us who are sensitive to all the halachic issues here, to the spirit of the law and the letter of the law, so certainly we wouldn't be selling chametz to Jews on Pesach and selling chametz that we had already sold to someone else, all of that would be off the table. But we would also try to, again, maintain an attitude of complete commitment to the seriousness of the sale in all ways, and also a complete appreciation of the Gezel Shilas that are there, and the combined sensitivity of the two, like we said last week, will hopefully keep us away from Chametz and will therefore be an effective fulfillment in letter and spirit of what the Torah was asking of us. So we'll stop there. Fascinating things to consider. God willing, next week, so maybe we'll find a different night to have the Chaburah, so we can get one Chaburah in before Pesach, and then we'll be off for Chol HaMoed, as is generally our practice. So stay tuned, and we'll figure out next week what night we'll try to have one more Chaburah before Yantif. Everyone should have a wonderful night and a wonderful week, and we'll see you soon.